Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Treuthart, part-time film critic, professor emerita at Gonzaga University.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that allows us to pursue the kind of comfort that only great, or sometimes only greatish, cinema can provide. This week, we're going to discuss the kinds of movies that bring us comfort. They're the kinds of movies that we've all experienced. You know, you're simply surfing your cable channels, looking for something to pass the time, and you notice a certain movie is playing. And yet, even if it is halfway done, you tune in because the movie affects you that way. No matter how many times you've seen it, something about it makes you want to experience it again. That's the kind of films that we're going to talk about during this week's show. And since this was my idea for a show, and I set it up like this, I wanted us to list the movies that we'd watch again and again, even if I stumble upon it halfway through on some random television station. And so many movies fit that description. Casablanca, for example, which I may have seen a dozen times, or The Magnificent Seven, the 1960 original, I mean, and not the 2016 remake. Alien, Aliens, and Blade Runner are good sci-fi choices, or The Graduate, which holds up even though it's 57 years old. However, when it came time to choose a couple of movies for this show, I went with a couple of movies that are a bit more recent. The first is a 1999 release titled Galaxy Quest. Directed by Dean Parisot, it stars Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, Sam Rockwell, Tony Shalhoub, the great Enrico Colantoni, and Justin Long. The idea, as I'm sure most moviegoers know by now, is a parody of a Star Trek-type show in which aliens from a threatened planet think such a show, also titled Galaxy Quest, are what they call historical documents. And they come to Earth to recruit the show's actors to help them defeat their enemies, led by a villain named Saris, named after the film critic Andrew Saris, little-known note. Shocked to discover what the aliens think, the crew, led by the never-give-up, never-surrender captain played by Allen, the actors are at first reluctant, and then they nearly screw up the whole plan. But in the end, spoiler alert for those who, after a quarter century, still haven't seen it, they succeed. Galaxy Quest has everything I look for in a comedy. Good satire, good characterizations that work beyond parody to feel authentic, good acting, they're all good, though Rickman, Colantino, and Rockwell stand out, good lines, many of which are delivered by Rockwell, decent special effects, and at least one scene that hits you right in the heart, Rickman's Dr. Lazarus and the theremin Quellic, played by Patrick Breen.
You know, you've been talking about Galaxy Quest as a quote-unquote comfort movie for I think as long as we've all been doing the show.
Yep.
Galaxy Quest.
I just saw it again at the Garland recently.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I had not seen it since I think I rented it on video when it first came out. And I had a feeling you were going to pick this movie. So I also rewatched it relatively recently. And you're right. It's a fun little movie. And I think so much of it has to do with the fact that they really lucked out with this cast.
Yes, they did.
I think everyone in it is just perfectly cast. For me, a person who I'd forgotten was in this movie completely and who I thought almost ran away with it is Sam Rockwell.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Long before any of us knew who he was, long before he would win an Academy Award. I think the first thing I remember him in was around the same time that Charlie's Angels reboot. Mm-hmm. He's in that too. He's really funny in this.
He played crewman number five, Guy Fleegman.
He's like basically an extra in one episode who kind of gloms onto this cast. And yeah, I just think the premise is really good. And it reminded me of Three Amigos, a similar premise where it's these kind of hapless entertainers get thrown into a situation that they think is just another one of their, you know, kind of play acting things. But it turns out to be very real.
Except that it's far, far superior to Three Amigos.
I like Three Amigos.
What did you think?
Well, I'm right with you. I've always liked this movie and I've seen it multiple times. And it's actually one of the few films I've seen multiple times because
I keep turning it on.
Well, there is that. I think that is a large part of it. But actually, I love Sigourney Weaver. Mm-hmm. I just really liked all of the characters. I like the underlying premise with the kids who are trying to do the right thing and, you know, the people who want to meet their heroes. So it really does have something for everyone.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll keep going on the comedy train with this one. I was thinking all of these movies that I could pick, and I was kind of like, yeah, you know, Citizen Kane or something like that, a movie I've seen a million times. But I went a little less highbrow with my choices. And I'm going to start with a movie that, and this is from personal experience, after I got my wisdom teeth out, I was out of my mind on drugs. And all I wanted to do was lay in bed and watch my first choice, which is 1985's Pee-wee's Big Adventure, a movie I've seen countless times. When this movie came out, Pee-wee Herman, the character, played, of course, by the late Paul Reubens, was mostly kind of an alt-comedy figure. He was on late-night television a lot. Letterman had him on constantly. He had a live show that was an HBO special, and he toured the country. I think he even sold out Carnegie Hall in the early 1980s. It was a character that Reubens had developed while he was a member of the Groundlings comedy troupe. And so this movie came out before Pee-wee's Playhouse, which is the children's show that made him
which
really
I absolutely
famous.
Was a total fan
oh,
of.
Yeah, it's one of those great like four quadrant shows that kids and adults could like. Mm-hmm. So this came out right before Pee-wee's Playhouse aired. Reubens wrote it with Michael Varhall and Phil Hartman, his fellow Groundlings member. And who directed it? A then unknown named Tim Burton, making his feature debut. And this takes the form of a road trip comedy where Pee-wee, who's this, you know, kind of man-child character, has his beloved bicycle stolen. And so he decides to hitch a ride from wherever he lives, to the Alamo, because he's told by a psychic that the basement of the Alamo is where his bicycle resides. And this movie, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, I mean, I guess you could say it's a children's movie, but it is filled with so many brilliant visual gags. It has this imaginative set design, this vibrant pop art style, all these weird supporting characters that Pee-wee meets along the way. And then at the center is this just truly genius comic performance by Paul Reubens, who I know a lot of people, including people my age and younger, who are put off by Pee-wee Herman. Sure. He's absolutely one of those your mileage may vary kind of characters. I think that he's funny. And this movie just has such a specific world that it creates. And I think I even referenced it when we reviewed Barbie, said this is one of the movies that has gotten closest to what I love so much about Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And so it is absolutely a film that anytime I have the opportunity to see it, I will put it on. And I just rewatched it shortly after Paul Reubens died and was just taken in by it again. Right. It's such a wonderful, funny movie.
And I, too, am a huge Pee-wee fan.
Oh, good.
I mean, I have, little known fact, but not a surprise, I have a Pee-wee doll.
I did know this, yes. Yeah. And I'm jealous of your Pee-wee doll.
I know, because you've dressed up like Pee-wee for
it's
Halloween.
It's true. It's true.
You and actually kind of look like him, yeah.
Well, I know you are, but what am I? Did I do that right? I don't know if I did that right.
Well, one of the things I really like about that movie is the very end where it's James Brolin in the movie version of his story.
And Morgan Fairchild.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and his bike ride through the studio back lot and all of that stuff.
And so then Pee-wee himself is in the scene, you know, and you see him aping it up in the background.
So funny. Yeah, no, this movie has so many big laughs in it. It's just a wonderfully inventive movie, and it makes me also long for the Tim Burton that was, because this kicked off such a great streak for him. And I don't know what happened sometime in the early 2000s, but Tim, we want you back. Mm-hmm. All right, MP, I think I'm going to kick it over to you. What's your comfort watch?
So I didn't do my homework.
Okay.
I went off the script, off
You're
the
fired.
Assignment. Oh, dear. Oh, no. But I think you'll appreciate what I have done. So when I thought about comfort movies, I was trying to figure out what does that actually mean? And I focused more on some genres. And when I put this out there, I hope you'll agree. So if you talk to people about comfort movies, and I think myself, they sort of fall into either the rom-com category, cheesy teen movies, Hallmark movies, etc.
10 and Things I Hate About You,
correct.
Something like that.
That's exactly right. So I have a list of cheesy teen movies. Since I don't watch Hallmark movies, I can't comment there. But the formula is basically the same. Mm-hmm. And it's the reliability, and it is the comfort, the predictability, the unreal notion. These are hamburger movies, not steak movies. Let's be clear, okay? So I came up with Booksmart, Superbad, Lady Bird, Risky Business, The Edge of 17, Napoleon Dynamite, Dirty Dancing, Bill and Ted, Anything by John Hughes, Easy A, 10 Things I Hate About You. And I think any of those movies, I just rewatched Superbad the other day, or at least two-thirds of it. And I don't know what it is about those teen movies in particular that may speak to us. Maybe it's so far removed from my life that I appreciate that about them. I also, it's nice to see people, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, who later have a career that goes in completely different directions. And so if I'm looking at things potentially to watch on the television, I would stop and watch almost any of those.
I'm really glad you brought up John Hughes, because Breakfast Club, 16 Candles are two movies that I would watch again and again.
I was going to say,
So you went with
just entire genres instead.
Correct.
That's interesting. Well, and one that you didn't mention that I seriously contemplated for this show is a movie I've seen 100 times. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes,
I could watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off anytime. And I think...
How about Animal House?
I think that's even like a step above in terms of like raunchiness from Ferris Bueller, obviously. Although Superbad, you mentioned Superbad. And I think it is with those movies is maybe it's kind of that idea that Lady Bird might not be quite the same because that was aiming for
something. Oh, you have a special place in your heart for Lady Bird.
But that's going for a more authentic kind of thing. But those movies, maybe it's because it shows us a version of teendom and high school that we didn't actually experience, and maybe no one actually experiences, especially something like Risky Business, mm-hmm. which is, you know, kind of a glossy Reagan era R-rated fantasy.
Well, and I'm just going to give a shout out because these are movies that you can watch with your grandkids if they're in their teens.
Yeah. With that, it is time to take a break. You're listening to a special edition of Movies 101. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to continue our discussion of films that we like to call comfort watches. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of this special edition of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbender, and I have been listing films that we go to for comfort, the kinds of films that we'll watch anytime, anywhere, again and again. And Nathan, you're going to start us off this time.
Yeah, and when faced with this prompt, my mind jumped right to comedy. I think that's just kind of what I will go back to in terms of comfort. Even though sometimes it's like you hear the same joke over and over again, sometimes it gets less funny. There are certain movies where I think they're just as funny as the first time I saw them.
Abducted by Aliens sketch on Saturday Night Live.
Kate McKinnon, and Ryan Gosling.
That was not top of mind, but sure, that is funny. So I was thinking about, okay, I have this coveted second spot. Am I going to pick something like, I don't know, Singing in the Rain or A Hard Day's Night? These movies I've seen a million times. I even thought of Back to the Future, which might be actually the movie I have seen more than any other
movie. The original.
It was constantly
the very
on TV
first one in the franchise,
kid.
Yeah.
But I decided to pick another comedy classic, which I have referenced on the show many times, but I don't think I've ever actually talked about.
Anchorman?
Not Anchorman.
Oh, what a surprise.
1997's Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Oh, yeah.
Directed by David Dobkin, written by Robin Schiff. Love this movie. And like Pee-wee, the characters of Romy and Michelle also have origins in The Groundlings. That's where Lisa Kudrow got her start, and she debuted this character. And Romy and Michelle as characters were actually fleshed out in a sitcom pilot before this movie got made. It never got picked up. Then Lisa Kudrow went on to be one of the Friends, and so she had clout and got this movie made. And then Mira Sorvino, who had just won an Academy Award for Mighty Aphrodite, played the other half of Romy and Michelle.
Before Harvey Weinstein made sure her career went into the toilet.
Yes, this was peak Mira Sorvino.
Yes.
And like Pee-wee, I think the reason I love the characters of Romy and Michelle is that they're so sunny and optimistic despite being surrounded by cynicism on all fronts. Mm-hmm. The sun always wins out. The S-U-N always wins out. And the basic plot of this movie, it's also kind of a road trip comedy now that I think about it.
Absolutely.
Romy and Michelle are these two kind of L.A. it girls. They're both single. They're fashion forward. They're working in this boutique. They kind of hate their jobs. And they get an invitation to their 10-year high school reunion. Now, of course, they were not popular in high school. And so they're just reflecting on all of the bad times they had. But they're really curious, like, what happened to all of these people that were either even less popular than us or who made our lives a living hell when we were teenagers? So they make the trek to their high school reunion. I think it's in Arizona somewhere. And on the way, they concoct this idea of, well, what have we been up to these last few years that'll impress everyone? So they come up with this idea that they invented the Post-it note. And of course, everything unfolds from there. And this movie is really funny, but it also is completely inventive. I mean, it has this big, long dream sequence in the middle of it, has these outrageous costumes that Romy and Michelle designed themselves. There's this elaborate interpretive dance number set to Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, me too.
There's this great supporting cast, Janine Garofalo and Alan Cumming and Justin Theroux. They're all so funny. And so if I ever need just a serotonin boost, I can always go back to Romy and Michelle. They never let me down. And as they always say, have a Romy and Michelle day. So yeah, one of my favorite
good choice.
Thank you.
Well, I of course, stuck with comedy also, but it's from one of the great decades of all film. We talked about it in another complete show about favorite decades. And the 90s saw some really great movies. Here's a short list. Pulp Fiction, The Big Lebowski, Goodfellas, The Shawshank Redemption, Trainspotting, Reservoir Dogs, The Usual Suspects, Dazed and Confused. The list goes on.
Those are on my to see list. One day I'll get to them.
But the film I chose as my second comfort watch is 1993's Groundhog Day. Directed by Harold Ramis and co-written by Ramis and Danny Rubin, it stars Bill Murray in one of the best roles. In one of his best roles is the sarcastic, arrogant TV weatherman Phil Connors, who is dispatched along with his producer Rita, played by Andy McDowell, and the cameraman Larry, played by Chris Elliott, to cover the annual Groundhog Day festivities in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Insufferable Phil can't hide his disdain for the local folks and equally can't wait to head out for his new job. But when a storm prevents him from leaving, he awakens to a repeat of the same day with Sonny and Cher singing I Got You Babe on the radio. It's such a great moment. Phil gradually realizes he is caught in a time loop and over the course of the film goes through all the stages similar to those suffering from grief, shock, anger, despair, and finally acceptance, which of course leads to his changing from being a selfish jerk to someone with true empathy for others. As much of a fantasy as it is, Groundhog Day works for a variety of reasons. First and foremost, it is arguably Murray's best comedic performance. Lost in Translation might be his best dramatic role. As he showed during his run on Saturday Night Live, he can play arrogant as well as anyone, but he makes Phil's change seem believable. McDowell may never have been a great actress, but she can play sweet, which is exactly what Rita needs to be. Elliot is atypically understated as Larry, but Stephen Tobolowsky is perfect as Phil's foil, Ned Ryerson.
Ned Ryerson.
And though it is a comedy, Groundhog Day tackles great themes. Phil struggles running the gamut of behaviors from destructive and manipulative to what he eventually becomes, a good and loving man. It's almost as if screenwriter Rubin, who had the original idea for the story, had read all the great philosophers and summarized their thoughts into one of the great comic films.
This is a great choice. Groundhog Day is a quintessential comfort watch and also very thematically appropriate because we're talking about movies you could watch over and over and over again.
Right, exactly.
And here's a movie about a guy who experiences the same things over and over again. I also went down a rabbit hole recently reading about all the theories about how long Phil actually spends in the time loop. There are all these theories where people have done like mathematical configurations and some are like, oh, he's in there for thousands of years.
Thank goodness for academics.
No kidding. They had some time on their hands and I think they put it to good use. And I agree with you about Bill Murray. I mean, you also read about the making of this film and he and Harold Ramis, their friendship basically came to an end on this movie because Bill Murray was apparently horrible to work with on the set and on other sets as well. But you would never know it. This movie has such an ease about it. It has such a comfort about it. Mm-hmm. And just, yeah, this is a television staple. And when I still had cable, of course, I would also stop and watch it no matter where it was at.
As I already predicted, I'm going to choose a genre to look at. And I've talked about this before, so it's not going to be a surprise to anyone. And it's what I've characterized as cheesy sports movies. And so if you think back, and I'm just going to list a few of them, Hoosiers, mm-hmm. Rocky, Bull Durham, Rudy, Remember the Titans, Boys in the Boat, Breaking Away, A League of Their Own, and Spokane's own special Vision Quest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what is it about this genre that people like?
Field of Dreams. You didn't mention Field of Dreams.
And there's a reason for that, because I think that is a completely artificial portrayal of a wife who would allow her husband, the only mainstay of their lives, this crop of corn in the backyard. Sure, honey, go do whatever you want with
it.
No problem.
It, he will come.
Yeah, something
Daddy
like that.
Daddy will come.
I like Field of Dreams too, Dan.
Yes,
okay,
yeah.
Whatever. But why do people like these sports movies? I mean, oftentimes they're factually based or based on a true story. So
as is Hoosiers.
Right, as are many of these. Boys in the Boat, for example.
Remember the Titans.
Because right? It has to do with people facing up to a challenge. And in many cases, even if they don't succeed, on some level, they learn something about themselves. It's just a wonderful story
They become better people. They're classic underdogs.
Precisely.
I agree. And there's always some family stuff that comes into play.
Breaking away. Perfect example.
That whole notion of collaboration and teamwork. And the thing I like about it, seeing other people on a team. I never really wanted to be on a team. I don't think I'm necessarily a good team player. But I do appreciate watching other people, just like sports generally. And then there's always some villains. It's oftentimes the coach or the assistant coach. And so I think all these sports movies are Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I think Breaking Away is, well, it's not underrated, but I think it might be kind of forgotten a little bit. That's such a great movie.
It is. And the people who were in it are terrific. Jackie Earle Haley.
Yep. Dennis Quaid.
The younger Dennis
Paul
Quaid.
Dooley.
Yes.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
Of all the ones that you mentioned, I think in terms of the cheesy sports movie formula, the best is Rudy. Because I don't care about football at all. I would rather do just about anything than watch a football game. But if you don't tear up at the end of Rudy, I don't, like, do you have a beating heart? You know what I mean? I mean, that is such a wonderful film.
You know, you talked about Bill Murray and how much of a pest he was on the making of Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Apparently, Gene Hackman showed up for the shooting of Hoosiers, and he was in a horrible mood. Was really hard to get along with. He hated the production, hated everything, could not wait to get out of there. When he saw the first cut, he turned to the filmmaker and said, "How did you do that?" I mean, it was amazing because it is a terrific movie. And Dennis Hopper's in that place.
Oscar nominated,
yes, exactly.
Dennis Hopper. Well, the same year that Blue Velvet came out.
And I think it doesn't matter what the sport is. Cricket, for example. I mean, yes. You think of things that have translated from other genres.
Bend It Like Beckham.
Or Chariots of Fire.
Yeah, yeah.
And so these universal themes, I think, attract people. And, you know, they relieve some stress and they allow us to go to our happy place, at least for a few minutes.
That's your version of a Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
I guess it is. You're right.
Yeah. And with that, it's time to close. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbin and Murray Pat Truthart and I shared with you and with each other our respective choices for comfort films. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the novelist Terry Pratchett. The whole of life is just like watching a film, only it's as though you always get in 10 minutes after the big picture has started, and no one will tell you the plot, so you have to work it out all by yourself from the clues. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.